This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's new movies I'm going to be talking about: Despicable Me, Baby Driver, and The House. Plus, I'm going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup, featuring a look back at the almost 40-year-old movie, Watership Down. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Two sad pieces of news. We had two deaths. The first one is Paddington Bear creator Michael Bond died at 91 years old. He had had a short illness at home and then had passed away. And it's sad to see him go, especially as we're leading up to a release of the second Paddington movie. The first one was very sweet and charming and brought it kind of into a modern world and a modern awareness. I remember reading the Paddington Bear books when I was a little kid, and that's just very charming. And if you read his story about, you know, how he had gone to school and then had joined the army and had made this children's book in the '50s, it's a very interesting story. So it's sad to, it's great to see a very long life, but it is always sad to see somebody go. Also, somebody who passed away this week was Michael Nyquist from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And that whole Millennium series, he played the original character. If you remember the remake Daniel Craig played, that was the original character that Michael Nyquist did. And he was Swedish, and he died at 56, which is actually really young. But he had lung cancer he had been fighting. Now, American audiences might recognize him from villainous roles in Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, and more importantly, John Wick, which gave him, I think, a really high profile. And if he hadn't gotten sick, he really could have launched into that international villain for American movies. And it's again, sad to see a career cut short. So both Michael Bond and Michael Nyquist, we're going to miss them. The next piece of news I want to hit really quickly is Patty Jenkins kind of confirmed that she was going to be doing Wonder Woman 2, kind of, sort of. And after this story hit, I believe it was on Screen Rant, she sent a tweet basically saying, well, this isn't exactly confirmed. It's more speculation and willingness. But look, I mean, Wonder Woman, this week, by the time I'm done talking in the sentence, it'll have passed Batman versus Superman as the highest grossing DC extended universe movie domestically. And not adjusted for inflation, the only other DC movies that overdo it are Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. Now, of course, if you adjust for inflation, Superman the movie from 1978, it's far, far beyond that, and probably won't reach it. But still, impressive for Wonder Woman, and I'm assuming Patty Jenkins will return for Wonder Woman too. Like I said, my big concern or interest is seeing how they take the character from where she is at the end of Wonder Woman to where she is when she shows up in Batman versus Superman. And how does that reconcile with apparently the realization that people don't want just a dark and gloomy universe for everything for the DC extended universe. So we'll see what happens with Wonder Woman too. That's where I think the real challenge is going to be, is moving her and meshing her with the rest of the story, and also seeing where Justice League goes with Joss Whedon taking over for Zack Snyder. Another piece from the DC Extended Universe is Matt Reeves, who, of course, was in charge of the sequels to the Planet of the Apes movies, and he got the War for the Planet of the Apes coming up. But Matt Reeves is directing The Batman, took over from Ben Affleck, who's just going to star in it, and it's come out that he said it's going to be basically a detective noir story, which is great. I like the idea of a dark Batman, and having a dark film noir-type detective story is awesome. Also, because Batman, or Bruce Wayne, rather, is the greatest detective of all time. He got his start in Detective Comics. That's actually why the Batman worked. I mean, he wasn't the superhero that, like, the superpowered Superman was from 1937. he was really a detective who just happened to dress up like a bat. And I'm looking forward to seeing a detective movie, because that's really what a Batman movie should be, not necessarily an action film. And then finally, going back into action territory, Avatar 2 is going to be pushing the boundaries for 3D technology, if of course it ever actually does go into production next year. James Cameron is developing with Christie Tech the ability to do a glasses-free 3D experience, which I think is fascinating, and I think that that's where we're going to end up going anyways. The big hurdle here is, will movie theaters catch up? Because one of the big things when Avatar first came out, it was a rush to convert movie theaters to 3D digital technology, and a lot of theaters invested a lot of money into it, and then the 3D boom, kind of the bubble sort of deflated a little bit. I don't think it was completely gone, and you certainly still have 3D movies, and they still make more money, but suddenly when they started charging extra for glasses and charging extra for an upcharge, and when you're paying 50% more to see a 3D movie, they priced themselves out of the market, and suddenly people started demanding a 2D experience, not because people hated 3D, it just people hated having to pay an extra 50% for the movie when they maybe weren't interested in that. That's the big problem. That's going to be the leap, not the technology of whether you can do it. And if it costs $10,000 to upgrade every single projector, you're going to have some resistance. And then if you suddenly double the price, you're going to have resistance from the consumer level. We're probably going to have glasses for the foreseeable future, because we just went through that upgrade less than 10 years ago. And they're upgrading seats. And, you know, you're quickly getting to the point where we're going to price the theaters out of the market for being able to show these movies. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to talk about is Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. It opens on December 20th.
What's this?
A game for those who seek to find a way to leave their world behind. Jumanji. You pick a character and you're that person in the game.
We got sucked into Jumanji and we become the avatars we chose.
Oh, wait, Bethany, don't look at it! No!
I'm an overweight middle-aged man.
Oh. I don't have my Claritin, and all I see around here is pollen.
Well, I don't have the top 2 feet of my body!
That was so intense. I, like, can't even with this place.
I was not immediately against this movie when it was announced. I'm like, okay, The Rock, I actually liked him in The Journey, too. I actually liked him in that. Jack Black, I don't think is terrible. I mean, I liked him in the Goosebumps movie. I think you can do some neat things with Jack Black as long as you don't let him go completely off the rails. Kevin Hart, same way. And I'm a big fan of Karen Gillan. The only problem with this one is it relies on the absurdity of these people taking over the bodies of characters that are not exactly like him. Like the nerdy kid turns into Dwayne Johnson and the pretty girl turns into Jack Black when they go to the avatars within the game. How many jokes can we milk from that? The thing with the original Jumanji was there was a lot of heart there. There was a real story about a kid trying to connect and reconcile his relationship with his father. People forget when they just think, oh, it was about animals running wild in the suburbia. But no, there was a real heart and soul to Jumanji that I don't see at all in this trailer. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Pitch Perfect 3, opening on December 22nd.
I would do anything to sing with you guys again. You guys, every year the USO puts on this performance to support the troops in Europe. What if I could get us an invite?
Here we go, here we go. It's my turn to make history.
Guys, we've never competed against bands that actually have instruments, so what's the plan?
I'm coming up, so you better get this party started. I'm coming out.
Aww. You guys just sing other people's songs, like karaoke.
Karaoke?
No.
That's so cute.
Here's one film series that maybe is pushing their sequels one too far. This is Turtles Going Back in Time, in my opinion. The absurdity of the first movie, of having all this focus on an a cappella group, was cool. The second one I thought really stretched it. This one looks like it's hitting a breaking point where it's trying to be part, and you watch the whole trailer, it looks like it's trying to be an action movie as well. And I don't know if this is going to work. And it's probably going to have a good soundtrack. And I'm sure the fans are going to like it. But trust me, at least from the way this movie looks, it may not be remembered as even the best in the series or the second best in the series when all is said and done. But we'll see what happens when it gets released. Anyways, that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Baby Driver and The House. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Down the road, what's my number? I wonder how your engines feel.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews, or drive right into the movie reviews, shall I say. And let's start off with Baby Driver, which actually opened on, well, Tuesday night, because you had previews, but Wednesday was when it opened. A talented, music-loving getaway car driver tries to untangle himself from a life of crime as he falls in love with a diner waitress.
Find something funky on there. Just in case, we gotta rip this joint up.
So here's the thing. I'm looking at some of the country's finest thugs, and of course, young Mozart in a go-kart over there.
People love great bank robbery stories, so let's give them something bold and brazen as to talk about over their latte.
This is directed by Edgar Wright, who I love his stuff. I mean, I've seen pretty much everything he's done. He did, of course, best known for Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, the first two in the Cornetto trilogy. Then he did The World's End, which was the weakest of the three. It also did the poorest of the three box office wise, and kind of let him down, especially because he was coming right off of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Now, I know there are people who just love Scott Pilgrim versus the World more than anything else in the universe. I'm not a big fan of the original source material for Scott Pilgrim. I will give credit to Edgar Wright that this was probably one of the best adaptations of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I just had issues with the original source material. And Scott Pilgrim versus the World was a notorious bomb. Nobody saw it. I mean, it's a very big cult favorite, but it just didn't do well. And part of that's because of Edgar Wright's sensibilities. He's very British, and he's very off-kilter. He's very different. He is not a mainstream director. And going all the way back to Spaced, if you look at his work on the TV show Spaced with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, more Simon Pegg than Nick Frost, and it was Simon Pegg and a woman who put together this show. And she shows up in like Doctor Who, and she shows up in Shaun of the Dead as Yvonne. He goes back to these geek-driven, musically inclined, very stylistic films. And I love the Cornetto trilogy, even World's End. But I'm always reluctant to jump on the crazy Edgar Wright bandwagon, because I think that's what's happening right now with Baby Driver. And I think that's going to be to its detriment, because it certainly was to Scott Pilgrim's detriment, because there was so much love heaped upon that movie and so much desire for that movie to do well by sort of the geek press. It could never live up to those expectations. And I think that was one of the dangers of what he would have done if Edgar Wright had done Ant-Man, because Ant-Man would have been a really interesting film done by Edgar Wright. I don't think it would have done very well. It certainly wouldn't have done as well as Ant-Man did. And I can totally see where Edgar Wright had conflicts with Marvel, which caused him to leave the film, because he wouldn't be able to do an Edgar Wright movie, and that's okay. Because I don't know if an Edgar Wright Ant-Man movie was necessarily what Marvel wanted, even though all the movie geeks did. Now, when it comes to Baby Driver, it's an interesting film, and it's a cool film. It's less British. It's sort of like Edgar Wright doing Quentin Tarantino, especially in the sense that he's dealing with criminals and he's dealing with some very interesting dialogue and fast talking. And it is in a lot of ways very dialogue driven and musically driven as well, which tends to connect with sort of that Quentin Tarantino crowd. It's extremely stylized and very cool. And Edgar Wright's always had his finger on the pulse of music very, very well. And he certainly delivers that with this movie. But it's not a perfect movie. There are at times even serious problems with it. First of all, one of the things that I find amazing is the movie geek press is going bonkers over this movie. And you can just watch the trailer, go download the trailer or see it in the cinemas. They're like, it's the greatest movie ever. 5 stars. It's gonna, okay. It's not that good. It's a fun movie and it certainly is worth seeing, but the overhype on this one is through the roof. The biggest problem I have is the love story. Anson Elgort plays the driver, baby driver, and he's got tinnitus, which is why he always puts in music in his ears. But he's such a great driver, but there's really no explanation to why he's so great at driving. It's almost like he has these superpowers, but he doesn't. It's, you feel like he's almost like they're giving him a Daredevil type backstory, but he really doesn't have anything that makes him super, so to speak. But yet he has these brilliant driving skills. And to the point where he also reads lips. And I mean, it's almost like he's this weird superhuman character, but he's just an average kid. My biggest problems is Kevin Spacey plays this guy who organizes these raids. And as cool and as hip and as neat as this movie is, he gets some of the worst people. And I'm not talking about like bad people. I'm talking about people who don't do well in a heist situation. If you're going to be running heists all over the city and you're going to be that good, you're going to have teams of people that you respect and can trust, because the worst thing you can have is thieves who aren't trustworthy to each other, because they're either going to go off script and get somebody killed or in jail, or they're going to flip on you, and you don't want that to happen. And I just don't believe that premise. Then on top of it, this love story between him and Lily James. I mean, Lily James is beautiful and she's pretty and all, but that's it. That's it. Her character, there's nothing to her character whatsoever. This movie has no depth to the female characters. One of the heist members is a woman, but she's just sort of like a sidekick to John Hamm. There's really nothing to the point that, you know, the geek press, the movie geek press loves to dissect a movie if it doesn't pass the Bechdel test, which is that feminism test of whether or not this movie is good for women. And this movie fails the Bechdel test rather spectacularly at times. And it's given a pass because nobody wants to criticize Edgar Wright for that. And part of that's because the love story is not good. There's no level of any sort of depth to Lily James's character. It's just that she's pretty and she's innocent. And that's what the character of Baby, that's why he's attracted to her. There's so much female gaze going on in this movie. It's almost like a Michael Bay movie. Well, maybe not as bad as a Michael Bay movie, but there certainly is a almost uncomfortable amount of female gaze on the female characters in this film. So it has a great start, but it explicably falls apart in the third act. But the only thing that keeps you going is the fact that it moves so fast with the cars and the driving and the music that you don't notice the massive plot holes in the movie. So Baby Driver's a good movie. It's entirely entertaining and exhilarating, but it is not worth the hype, but it's still worth seeing. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Real quickly, I'm going to talk about The House. After losing their daughter's college fund, a married couple turns their basement into a casino to make money fast.
When I became a dad, I made a choice to support my daughter's dreams.
You don't have enough money.
It says right here we have $401,000.
That says you have a 401k account.
Alex thinks we can afford tuition and we can't.
We gotta lie. That's what parents do.
Welcome. I have a way for you guys to make 4 years tuition in 1 month. Underground casino.
Seems to check out.
Do this math. You're 40 years old and you go to jail for 20 years. How old are you when you get out?
90.
No.
This movie was famously not screened. So while I like the people involved, it wasn't screened. And I wasn't going to waste my time to go see it because I'm getting tired of this garbage. Man, I like Amy Poehler. I like Will Ferrell. I like Jason Mendoza. This movie looks like it could be good and maybe it has some funny parts, but boy, I think it's going to be a stinker because they didn't screen it for anybody. Maybe I'll review this when it comes on DVD and Blu-ray, but right now I'm getting tired of these movies that are being hidden from critics and I'm not even going to give it the benefit of the doubt half the time. So yeah, so it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Despicable Me 3.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. And like I've been doing this summer, because summer is a time for family. Summer isn't just a time for movies. And because it's summer and I have relatively loosey-goosey hours on when I need to be home and when I need to be places, and I've got my kids home with me all summer, so I've been bringing on my son, Nicholas Carr, to help me with movie reviews. Now we're coming back to talk about Despicable Me 3, and I've brought back Nicholas Carr into the studio.
I'm back.
First of all, do you like doing this? Do you like doing the reviews?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's nice for people to get to know me.
Get to know you? Oh, why? Are you going to run for office or something sometime?
Yeah, not a chance.
The only
thing I would be able to run for office is Skylanders.
Skylanders office, in case you know. For those of you out there who aren't in that very narrow realm of childhood that Nick is, because Nick, you're how old, 9?
Yes.
Okay. And he is totally into Skylanders, which is an online gaming show.
It's a Toys to Life.
Toys to Life?
Yeah.
Wait, is that like Thug Life?
No!
Is this like a gang? Is this like Skylanders gang?
No!
What does that mean? What does Toys to Life mean?
It's basically where you put toys on something, and in the game, they come to life.
Oh, that's with the portal. It's one of these things where there's a little platform you can take toys, and then the toys will activate a character in the game, and you can play with those toys.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about Despicable Me 3. Let's just really quick, I'm going to play the trailer, and then you and I can have a little chat about it. In Despicable Me 3, after losing his job at the Anti-Villain League, Gru reunites with his long-lost brother to restart his life of crime.
I have a twin brother.
Twin brother?
Big brother?
My brother! So, how are things career-wise?
Ha ha, great!
You let the most wanted villain just get away! You're fired!
So great!
I brought you here to continue the family business! Villainy is in your blood!
I left that life behind me!
Become a villain again!
That's pretty nice!
Before I get your take on Despicable Me 3, tell me what your thoughts are on Despicable Me, the first and second movie.
I like them. I like how in the first movie, it wasn't the beginning of the Minions. Because that, to start off with, isn't really good in my standards.
Okay. Well, the Minions were just sidekicks initially. So wait, is this the third movie?
No.
Which is it?
The fourth.
Yes. See, now this is a smart kid. Why is Despicable Me 3 the fourth movie?
Because there's Despicable Me, Despicable Me 2, Minions, and then Despicable Me 3.
That's right. So even though Gru was only in Minions for a little bit, this is really the fourth in the series.
Yes.
Did you like the Minion movie as well as the other Despicable Me movies?
Yes.
Which did you like better, first Despicable Me or the second one?
I like the second one.
You like that one better?
Yeah.
Why was that?
Because Gru's wife's name? It's Lucy, I think.
Is it Lucy? It's Lucy Wilde.
Yay!
Okay, so you liked actually her in the movie.
Yeah, I liked introducing her.
Okay. Did you like her? Because the girls were just regular girls. He just adopted the regular girls in the first movie.
Yeah.
Whereas Lucy Wilde, what did you like about her?
That she was also a secret agent.
Yeah, she's not exactly a regular girl. She's very, you know, she's got her own, not superpowers, but she's trained, we'll say.
Yes.
See, now here's the thing. I loved the first movie. And the reason I loved the first movie is because it had a lot of heart. It reminded me a lot of a Pixar movie. Because Pixar takes its time and gives a really sweet story along with, you know, sort of this hyper real, kind of goofy, really bizarre film. But in the first one, you had this real heart. The other reason I liked the first one better than the second one is the first one had a part for everybody because that's what the movie was about. When you come back and do the sequel, you have a story about Gru, but then you're like, oh, wait, we got to have a story about all the girls and we got to have a story about the kids. And so everybody has to get a story. And sometimes those stories, I don't think, fit together terribly well. And that was my issue with the second movie.
Yeah, I also like how the minions kind of speak gibberish and just put some actual English words in there.
Well, you know what they speak, don't you?
Gibberish.
It's actually called Minionese. It's sort of this amalgamation of gibberish and English and French. Because the guy who directs this is French. Pierre Coffin. He's French. I believe he's a French guy. And
that sounds like a French name.
It sounds like a French name. There you go. Yeah. He's a French animator. Yeah. And he does a lot. I think he does the voice for the Minions too. So they work in this sort of European French flavor to it. So, all right. So you liked the second one better. And why is, what specifically, if you can point out one reason why you like the second one better.
I think I did already.
I know, but I'm just asking you to remind me.
How they introduced...
It's radio. It's in the moment. It's theater in the moment, theater of the mind. You got to say everything because people will forget 2 seconds. Somebody may have tuned in like right now and don't know why. So let's answer again. Why did you...
Because how they entered it in Lucy.
Lucy. Oh, that's right. Because you like Lucy in there. Yeah. Right. Now, this third movie, what do you think of it?
It was unique.
It was unique. Okay. That's sort of like saying that you didn't like it, but you have.
I liked it.
You did like it. Okay. Yes. So that's not a backhanded comment.
No.
All right. Okay. So it's unique. What about it did you like?
I liked how it's unexpected that the minions go to jail.
See, unless you've seen the trailer.
Yes.
Or the posters.
Yeah.
Or an ad on television.
Yeah.
But you didn't know exactly how they got there.
No.
Now, in your time in jail, when you were in prison, do you think that was realistic? Did you get banana tattoos and everything?
I was never in jail.
Okay. So you say. Okay. Okay, so you like the minions. Here's the thing. One of the things they do with the minions in this is they separate the minions from Gru through most of the movie. And the minions kind of get their, you know, they had their own movie, but they kind of get half of a movie here because you don't hear anything. They're not with Gru. Gru does his own thing. Yeah. Did you like that? Did you like them not being with Gru?
Yeah, kind of.
Do you think it gives them another minion movie coming up?
Yeah.
You want that. All right. One of the things that I liked about this movie is it got back to Gru. It got back to the hyper-real, crazy spy stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's neat because I love the design of that. I love the way it looks. I love the sort of heightened Get Smart nature of it. You don't know what Get Smart is. That's way before your time. That was before your time. The movie they made was before your time.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the movie they made was like right around when you were born. It was like 2008 or something, which starred Steve Carell, actually, who does the voice of Gru. But that doesn't mean anything to you.
No.
You're looking at me like I got a fish coming out of my head.
You do.
I do? Well, I better go get that checked out. All right. The only problem I had with this, and this reminded me of Angry Birds and Storks. Did I take you to see Storks?
Yeah.
There's a philosophy in animation that when in doubt, either go big and loud or go soft and tender. And Pixar will often go soft and tender. Pixar is really good at telling a nice story and taking time to breathe. Or the Disney movies like Moana and Zootopia, those things, they slow down sometimes. Other movies like Angry Birds and Storks, whenever they feel like there's a lull, they just get louder and more obnoxious. And I felt that this did this a little bit too much. But on the same token, I loved the sort of future retro look of the movie. I loved the fact that there are back to the spy gadgets and the angle, which is kind of what I loved about the first movie. Overall, what's your rating? Sucks, rocks, kind of rocks.
Rocks.
Rocks all the way for you?
Yeah.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Yay! All right, I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks simply because I didn't love it as much. What's that face?
I knew it.
What? You knew what?
Because it's a kid's movie.
No, I love kids' movies. I love kids' movies. Remember what? Kubo and the Two Strings. That was my favorite movie of last year. Boy, everyone's a critic of critics. You should run for office. All right.
No, I shouldn't.
Well, that's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about 5 movies to watch on the 4th of July, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Watership Down. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies for the final segment, and we are going to start things off with a Fat Guy 5. This is 4th of July weekend. It's weird to think about it that way because the weekend actually started on Friday in June. 4th of July falls on a Tuesday, which is an odd time for it to fall because it's usually a big movie release day. It's sort of like when Christmas falls on a Sunday or a Monday. It's easier when it falls on the weekend. But 4th of July being on a Tuesday means that Monday pretty much everyone's getting off. So you kind of get this 4-day weekend. And you know, even if you don't have the third off on Monday, you probably not go to work and your boss isn't going to know because your boss is probably taking that time off. But this is technically 4th of July weekend. 4 days of drinking before noon to deal with. But I figured I'd do a Fat Guy 5 this week, and that would be not 5 patriotic movies, because I did that last year, I believe. But let's talk about 5 movies to watch on the 4th of July. First one I want to hit is Yankee Doodle Dandy. This is, of course, the story of George Cohen, played by James Cagney, which is just fun to watch because it's a classic movie. It's from the 40s. It's black and white. It has great music. It's patriotic at the same time as sort of being biographical and historical. And you know, I mean, there's still going to be some license taken with that, but that's sort of like a perennial favorite. That's something always that's fun to look at. Another one that's a nice sort of, you know, maybe not totally accurate historical movie, 1776. This is for the musical lovers in the house. This is, of course, the Broadway musical that was made into a movie, which isn't great, and it does run a bit long, but, you know, for the Broadway fan, 1776, that's something you can watch. Certainly worth watching on Independence Day, because it's about the founding of our country, which is the birthday of our country. It's July 4th. The next one, this is for people who want to be a little more edgy, somebody who wants to be maybe, you know, if you're somebody who likes to protest, or if you're somebody who likes to give an alternative look at patriotism, you've got Born on the 4th of July, which is Oliver Stone's movie starring Tom Cruise. One of the first movies with Tom Cruise where he is taken seriously as an actor. I mean, a lot of people forget. I mean, now that he's had such a long career, people forget that in the mid-80s, he was just sort of the risky business guy. But this was one that really gave him a chance to stretch his acting ability and open up his wings. And yeah, it's not exact. I wouldn't call it necessarily a patriotic movie because it does question a lot of stuff, especially Vietnam. And it was made at a time where the country was sort of reconciling where it was. And it's Oliver Stone. You may or may not like him. But yeah, Born on the 4th of July. Certainly worth watching on the 4th of July. The next one, let's get into the fun movies, the really fun movies. Independence Day. Who doesn't want to watch it? Not the sequel, although the last half of the sequel ain't bad, but the original Independence Day by Roland Emmerich back from the late 90s. Independence Day was such a phenomenon. I remember when that came out as one of the first movies that I bought preview tickets for, early tickets for, because you were starting to be able to do that in the late 90s. I remember just it with the excitement surrounding that movie was insane. I mean, I haven't seen a movie hyped like that with that sort of level of of homegrown excitement and organic excitement for a long, long time. But finally, the fifth one, the movie that is worth watching on the 4th of July, that's a great 4th of July movie and everyone forgets about it. It's the Die Hard of 4th of July movies, and that is Jaws. Because, of course, you got to remember, the whole thing about Jaws was they didn't want to close the beaches on the 4th of July because that's where all their money comes from, and they didn't want to have a shark out there, and then somebody gets eaten, so they have to go after him and get the shark. Jaws is still such a great movie, and as fun as some shark movies like 47 Meters Down or The Shallows are, or Deep Blue Sea, you don't get shark movies like this. If you've never seen the original Jaws, shame on you. Go see the original Jaws because it's amazing. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last week, Transformers 5. This is interesting. Transformers 5 tanked domestically this weekend. Sure, it made almost $45 million over the course of the weekend. And it made $68 million on the 5-day. That's miserable. The last Transformers movie made $100 million over the course of one weekend. That one weekend, it came in at $45 million. It was less than half over the weekend. This is a miserable performance for Transformers. The only thing that's going to save this is the international. And that's good and bad for Transformers. That's good and bad for Michael Bay. I mean, they're banking on this to be big in China, and it's huge. But what you want, a studio wants a movie that's popular in both the United States and overseas. Something like Beauty and the Beast was this year. Incredibly popular in the United States, incredibly popular overseas. They'll take a movie that does very big business in one realm or the other, but it can tend to be disappointing. We saw that with Battleship, and we saw that with John Carter, and we saw that with Warcraft. Warcraft is considered a bomb, even though it did very, very well, and it made plenty of money internationally, but they're not even going to release a sequel in the United States because it bombed so badly. Now, we talked about Wonder Woman topping the DC Extended Universe. That's happening this weekend. It's probably happening right now as I'm speaking. Despicable Me is going to win this weekend. I think it's good for $100 million. These movies tend to make really, really big box office, both in the United States and overseas. I think $100 million for the weekend is good. It's going to be a slower weekend for Baby Driver. I mean, it's still going to be in the teens over the weekend and the $20 million range for its 5-day, which is almost the highest grossing Edgar Wright movie ever already. So Americanizing his stuff does work, and which is what he didn't do with Scott Pilgrim. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the Home Cinema Roundup. The movie I want to talk about first, which is sort of, it's in a vintage film, and it's Watership Down. And there's a reason why I actually stumbled on this movie this week, and I'll come to it. I'll kind of take you through that path, but let's play the trailer first. In this animated film based on Richard Adams' epic novel, a colony of rabbits leave their warren to settle a new one when one of them predicts a violent end.
We've got to go away from the warren, all of us.
Go away?
Yes, before it's too late.
Is there something wrong? What's he all about?
They're coming.
I'll settle with you myself, Bigwig.
Come on and try, you crack-brained slave driver.
A terrible thing is coming.
What do you mean?
The field. It's covered with blood.
There he goes.
First of all, the reason I got to Watership Down is because I saw Baby Driver. And of course, the name Baby Driver is the name of a Simon and Garfunkel song, which is used in the movie. And then I started going down the rabbit hole of, no pun intended, of listening to Simon and Garfunkel tunes. And I swerved into Bright Eyes, which is just an Art Garfunkel song. And it's probably his biggest hit domestically, internationally. And it comes from Watership Down. And then I'm like, oh, I kind of want to see this movie again. So my son and I watched it, my older son, he's 14, Ben, and I warned him already. I said, look, this is an animated film, and it's about rabbits, but it's not Bugs Bunny. This is a grown-up movie. It's not for kids necessarily, just because it's a cartoon. This is an intense movie. Now, I've never read the book, but I do kind of want to put that on my Kindle and read it at some point, because I've heard it's even better. But it's this complex story about these rabbits who and it's from their point of view. But it's also taking it from what a real society of rabbits would be, with mythology and military, and they're trying to get a new warren But of course, to have a colony grow, you need to have females. So then it's also, of course, to try and bring female rabbits into their colony so they can settle this new area, because their other place is being developed. And of course, the humans are there. They're going to poison all the rabbits and kill all the rabbits in the field so they can build something. And it's a fascinating story, because it takes these what you think are just adorable little creatures and it gives them real teeth. I mean, to the point, it's a bloody movie. It is at times disturbing. It is terrifying. There's sequences of it where one of the rabbits, you know, it's dealing with death and the circle of life, not, and way, way more intensely than something like The Lion King. If you've never seen Watership Down, it is worth renting and checking out. There's some goofy 70s stuff in there, but there's some pretty intense stuff. There was one point where this one rabbit kills another rabbit and there's blood everywhere. My son's like, oh my God, he was surprised. I'm like, yeah, it's not Bugs Bunny, man. And there's parts that can be pretty terrifying, even though it was an animated film from the 70s. So absolutely worth checking out. If you want to revisit it, the Criterion has a copy. You can go rent it on Amazon for like $3, $4. Definitely worth checking out.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Other movies that are coming out this week on DVD and Blu-ray: Trainspotting 2, which is a neat movie. I love Danny Boyle, but it's more of a 40-year-old version of Trainspotting than a 20-something version of Trainspotting. Power Rangers, which was better than I thought it would be. The second half is much, much better than the first half, which is, it takes a long time to get some traction with this film. The Belko Experiment, which I've heard is brutal, but to me, that's not a selling point. As a friend of mine said, oh, it's a brutal movie. I'm like, I don't necessarily need to see brutal. I just want to see a good story. And then The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which I talked about a couple weeks ago in a spotlight, that is now available for purchase everywhere, and it's not just like a Target. That is it for the show. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Spider-Man Homecoming. Until then, happy 4th of July, and have a fat time at the movies.